To the third case of the day, the United States v. Bowling. Ms. Wheatley.
Good morning. My name is Lucy Jewett Wheatley, and I represent the appellant Ron Frederick Bowling. There are two areas of Mr. Bowling's case that I would like to focus on today. First, briefly, the fact that false evidence of Mr. Bowling's career offender status was introduced at his trial was both highly prejudicial and seriously damaging to his credibility and merits vacation of his conviction and remand for a new trial. Second, and this is where I'd like to spend the bulk of my time, Mr. Bowling was sentenced to 180 months in prison, where the top of the guideline range was 105 months. The sentence is facially unreasonable, and there was no adequate justification under the 3553A factors made by the judge in this case. First, briefly, relating to the career offender evidence. During trial, the government identified Mr. Bowling as a career offender, which he in fact was not, then explained that that meant he had three prior felony convictions when he in fact did not, then stated he had five prior felony convictions in Illinois when he in fact did not, then introduced a false printout purporting to be an official record stating that he was a career offender when he in fact was not. This trial, the jury only saw about 12 hours of testimony over the course of 3 days. So this false evidence really pervaded the trial and was highly prejudicial. There was certainly a reasonable likelihood that this could have affected the judgment of the jury.
You were saying it was false. It was a mistake that made that record look like there were that many felonies, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. We do not contend that the government purposely introduced this false evidence, though it is not clear as to why the police detective who initially testified this way, why he testified this way and had false information. But regardless, whether or not it was purposeful, it certainly was damaging to Mr. Bowling's credibility, and his credibility was the cornerstone of his defense. He was the only witness, I believe, that was admitted on his own behalf, so it was absolutely vital that the jury believe him if he was to have any hope of succeeding. And, of course, when he did testify, he went into his criminal record in part in an attempt to explain that this career offender characterization was incorrect, that his past offenses have in fact been petty. But of course, given all this prior testimony that portrayed him as a very serious offender, this only made him look incredible.
Wasn't there video evidence of the commission of the crime, though?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. Though in Mr. Bowling's testimony, he did have an explanation that the video did not correctly show what it appeared to show. And again, his credibility was the only thing that was going to make the jury believe or disbelieve that, and his credibility was very affected by this career offender issue. And of course, one other point to make is that this evidence came in initially in response to a question by Mr. Bowling on a very unrelated topic as to why his case had gone federal, but after that, the judge let it to continue to come in over and over and over again. Mr. Bowling did object, but there was no need for this evidence to refute anything Mr. Bowling had said. But I'd like to get to the sentencing issue now. The sentence on its face is unreasonable. It's 75 months over the top of the guidelines range. When there is going to be such a dramatic departure, the judge needs to provide adequate justification under the 3553A factors. To give you an idea of how unusual the sentence is, out of 19,623 offenders with the sentence under the same code section as Mr. Bowling, Only 74 of them received an upward departure here. I'd also like to point out that the guidelines range, 84 months to 105 months, is under the old crack cocaine versus cocaine ratio. So that is, in fact, an even higher range than perhaps would be today. And we're not contending that this is retroactive, but just pointing out that when you take that into account, this range is even more unreasonable. But so if you're going to have only – if you're going to put Mr. Bowling in the category of only 0.3% of offenders, the judge does need to adequately justify why Mr. Bowling is so unusual, because under 3553A, a primary purpose of the guidelines is to – and something the judge must consider is avoiding unwarranted disparities among similar defendants. In this case, the judge only mentions unwarranted disparities twice in what the government terms 12 pages of transcript. And both times he mentions this, he gets the standard wrong. The first occasion he mentions it, he says, "I think that avoiding unwarranted disparities goes to what is fair." And then he says, "I have been fair to you, Mr. Bowling," and goes on to discuss how he was fair to Mr. Bowling at trial. But of course, avoiding unwarranted disparities among similar defendants has nothing to do with how fair the judge was to the individual at trial, and we don't necessarily dispute that, that the judge was fair generally at trial, with the exception of the things we point out in our briefs. So there he gets it wrong. Then later he mentions it in a single sentence one more time, where he says, "There's not an unwarranted," and I'm paraphrasing, "not an unwarranted disparity here between other defendants I have sentenced." But again, the standard is not unwarranted disparities just based on people this single judge has sentenced. It's unwarranted disparities across judges and across even across districts. And so the fact that the only two times the judge considered this factor that underlies the entire sentencing scheme that's demonstrated by the guidelines, he got it wrong both times, indicates that he did not give adequate consideration to this factor. The government does not produce any cases where an offender like Mr. Bowling received a similar sentence. And in fact, the cases they do introduce actually prove are the exceptions that prove the rule. For instance, McIntyre, where the defendant received a similar 100-month upward modification, was a case where the defendant was a violent bank robber whose criminal history was not encompassed by the guidelines and whose threat against death threats against the public defender were also not encompassed by the guidelines. Here, the only things the judge focused on were Mr. Bowling's alleged dissembling at trial and his criminal history. Both of these factors had already warranted upward modifications under the guidelines and were included in that 105-month top of the range. The judge went on about them at length. However, he did not explain why these factors were so egregious that they were even worse than similar offenders who already had that guideline range. He did not explain that at all. In other circuits, courts have found when the factors that judges rely on are encompassed in the heartland of the guideline range, there must be a compelling justification for an upward departure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wheatley. Mr. Norwood.
Your Honors, may it please the Court and Counsel. With respect to the mistaken evidence, and it was mistaken, the situation was that at the time the defendant was indicted, at the time of trial, all the way up until the day of sentencing, everybody, the government, the court, even his own attorney, thought he was a career offender. The way it was discovered that he was not a career offender was his defense counsel, who was reappointed for purposes of sentencing, went to the state court stenographer, who had been retired, to get a transcript of the proceedings. The actual state court judgment showed he was a career offender. It was the court reporter's notes and the transcript of the state court sentencing where the judge said, we're sentencing you to the lesser included offense of possession. And that's how that got discovered. As Judge Cuddy said, the videotaped evidence was uncontroverted other than the defendant's own word. The officers also recovered 16 rocks of crack cocaine from the defendant's crotch. So the evidence was overwhelming that this defendant did in fact commit the crimes he was convicted of. Also, this evidence that is mistaken did not go to the essential elements of the crime. It was to a question posed by the defendant, and that question that he posed after questioning why his case went federal was basically, what factors prompted this case to go federal? And the officer gave him the response of him being a career offender. And this is just like the Bursey case, which is cited by the defendant at 85 Fed 3rd 293. In that case, the defense counsel, when questioning a police officer, asked the officer, do you think my client is street smart? And the officer said yes. And on redirect, the prosecutor asked the officer, well, why do you say the defendant is street smart? And the officer went into a long discussion of the defendant's history, the officer's contacts with that defendant, including prior shootings, prior arrests, and this court upheld that as being permissible. With respect to the
sentence. This situation is analogous to that, though?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
He makes this statement, which doesn't seem to me as very prejudicial to the prosecution, and that opens the door, presumably, to pursue this subject for the rest of the trial. That's a little extreme.
Well, it wasn't pursued for the rest of the trial. It was questioned about on redirect, and Judge Reagan gave cautionary instructions to the jury at that time, as well as in.
Whether it's harmful or harmless is another issue, but it doesn't seem to me that this justifies that what followed.
And, well, even if Your Honor believes it was in error, then the government would argue that the error was harmless based on all the evidence in this case. With respect to the sentence, there's no dispute that Judge Reagan correctly calculated the guideline range, that he went through all the necessary factors, that he went through the crack powder disparity. He even said whether the guidelines were mandatory or advisory, I would still be giving you the same sentence. What Judge Reagan said, and the reason why the sentence is above the guideline range for one reason, is the defendant lied multiple times, and Judge Reagan was taking that into account. He says it directly. And Judge Reagan identified at least six specific instances where this defendant lied during his testimony. The defendant has a right to take the stand or not take the stand, but he doesn't have a right to prevaricate time and time again in front of the jury and the court. And then once he's found guilty, say, well, you can't hold that against me.
How does that fit in with the obstruction of justice increase?
Judge Reagan found that there was a two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice for all the lies, but he only applied the two-level enhancement one time. But this court has held, and the case is cited in my brief, that all the other lies can be taken into account under 3553A. And that's exactly what Judge Reagan did in this case. The court has no further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Ms. Wheatley?
Your Honor, just a few points. You are absolutely correct that this did permeate the entire trial after the evidence got in. And in fact, something that's very significant is the prosecutor, in fact, mentioned this on closing arguments and said exactly, he's a career offender. This goes to his credibility. So it would be incorrect to view this as something that was an isolated incident. And in fact, though the two words career offender came out in response to Mr. Bowling's question, after that it was on redirect where all the rest of this information was brought in, and Mr. Bowling did object, and it was still brought in. A few more points. With respect to the sentencing, though the judge, as I said, did mention all the 3553A factors, he did not explain how the sentence merited a departure from the guidelines. And as you pointed out, the obstruction of justice, the alleged perjury, was accounted for in the guideline range. Mr. Bowling had already received an upward sentence because of that alleged perjury. He had already received an upward sentence because of his criminal history. That was already all in there. The judge decided to tack on an extra 75 months, and these were the only reasons he gave. For that to be merited, he needed to explain why the guidelines did not adequately encompass these issues. And the judge does not do that at all, and in fact, when he does mention the 3553A factor of unwarranted disparity, he gets the standard wrong both times. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. Ms. Wheatley, you were appointed in this case.
I'm pro bono counsel.
Right.
And we thank you for your able representation. Case is taken under advisement.